Okay, welcome back, everyone. As promised, we are back to all online lectures. We will remain this way for the remainder of the semester. We won't go back and forth anymore. So just all online from here on out. I have Slido open again over here on the side. I mentioned that I was kind of dropping that because it was too difficult to manage with the on-campus lectures, but now sitting in my office with a couple of screens, it's a little bit easier for me to have Slido open to the side here. Reminder, all that information should still be on the website. If you ever want to ask any anonymous questions or make any anonymous comments, you can go to app.slido.com or slido and enter the code ECE581 and then submit anything anonymously. But as always, still welcome to post anything in the chat or unmute yourself and ask a question, make a comment anytime. So we'll dive in for today's lecture. Last time we were talking about generalizing this resonant switch concept. Hopefully we'll finish and make good on that today. The idea being looking at the switching network as a separate sub-circuit of an overall PWM converter, called a switch cell. Extracting that, we can do all these things that we had done previously in 481, like averaging and small signal linearization on the switch cell itself. This is fundamentally the only real difficult part of this circuit. If we look at this buck converter and take this switch cell out, everything that's left is just a nice LTI circuit. So this is really the part where we need some power electronics techniques to deal with it. So last time we showed, okay, you can just average the switching cell rather than doing volt second balance and cap charge balance as we would normally do. We can apply that averaging directly to the switching waveforms instead here, averaging V2, V1, I1, I2. And we end up getting to the same point we would have if we had averaged from the inductor and capacitor waveforms. Okay, as I mentioned, we can average in the state space equations as well. All of it will get us back to the same point, which is just an average model of our switching converter. Okay. So where this really helps us is we can keep all of the results that we had previously for PWM converters and just replace what is the average model of this PWM switch cell with the average model of a resonant or soft switching switch cell. Here we had looked at this quasi-resonant zero voltage switching buck converter, had found an expression for the conversion ratio of it, which for the buck specifically happened to also be the switch conversion ratio V2 over V1. And we named that mu, which will be a general thing that we'll carry through as the switch conversion ratio. And that mu really does the same thing that D was doing in our PWM conversion ratio. And we'll find that, okay, we can use that relationship and take all of our results from looking at just a normal PWM buck converter, replace D with mu, and now we've got the behaviors of this resonant or quasi-resonant PWM, resonant buck, not PWM. We did some classification of different converters. I've pulled this slide from a couple lectures ago, just to remind you of the four different cases of these high frequency single resonance switching networks that we have. We've got the quasi square wave ones, ZVS quasi square wave, things like just the large triangular ripple buck and boost converters that we've looked at before. ZVS quasi resonant is the one we just derived. ZCS quasi-resonant is covered in the book. ZCS quasi-square wave, the one remaining one, but it'll proceed exactly in the same format. If we look at any of those switching networks, they all have very similar expressions for this switch conversion ratio. It depends on this function P1/2 or P1, which differs only in this 2 pi, whether it's a full wave or half wave implementation, but has these same kind of terms embedded in it. And is dependent on either JL or 1 over JL. Largely looks like the same kind of equation. Okay. So we identified a couple of these just as examples, showing how you could take some resonant type converter embedded inside a PWM parent topology, like a flyback or forward, and identify which of these equations would you use and what are the main switching characteristics of it that are possible to achieve. Flyback is a ZVS quasi square wave. The forward was a ZCS quasi resonant half wave according to this voltage bidirectional switch. Look at one more here, this ZCS quasi-resonant boost, kind of show as an example how we could convert from a typical boost converter that I'm showing into a ZCS quasi-resonant boost converter. Okay. So for a typical boost converter, we all know very well by now, PWM boost, M is equal to 1 over 1 minus duty cycle, or 1 over D prime, steady state. If we make this into a ZCS quasi-resonant boost, so how would we do that? Let's hop back up here. ZCS quasi-resonant, we need inductance kind of in the loop between the MOSFET and diode, and then capacitance in parallel with the diode. Those are the sort of parasitics we can integrate or the resonant elements that we want. So we could think about incorporating the capacitance of the diode. And then if we were really just incorporating explicitly the component capacitance, the diode's capacitance, then we can end up with resonant inductances anywhere else in this loop, really. So we could be incorporating multiple different parasitic elements. Some of this loop inductance may also have kind of any other capacitance if we have capacitance from our PCB layout between this node and ground. We have any capacitance here across the inductor, really anything between this node and any other DC node in the circuit, that capacitance is integrated into what we would use as our resonant capacitor. So incorporating those parasitic inductances and capacitances, we now have a ZCS quasi-resonant boost. Resonant frequency would be dictated by the lump total inductance and total parallel capacitance. And the solution for it would be, and here ZCS quasi-resonant, depending on whether we are full or half wave, we would end up with one of these two expressions, either F times P1 half or F times P1 of JL for the switch conversion ratio mu. So we take that equation, and to get the overall conversion ratio of the boost converter, all we have to do is plug in for D, replace it with mu. So our ZCS quasi-resonant boost, without doing any additional analysis, the overall conversion ratio is 1 over 1 minus mu of T, 1 over 1 minus mu in steady state. Where mu is equal to F times P1 half of JL for a half wave implementation. F times P1 of JL if it's a full wave implementation, but we would need some bidirectional switches in there. And it's as simple as that. Since we already know the main characteristics of the PWM converters, and now we have all the characteristics of the resonant switch cells, we can just plug them together and don't need to do any more derivation. The next thing that we may want to consider is, okay, I'm writing here what happens if mu is time varying and what happens if we just have one operating point that we're considering. And that kind of leads towards what you've all done previously, which is, okay, can we derive transfer functions and do a small signal model of these resonant converters for the purpose of control design in the same way that we had done with PWM cases? And the answer is yes, and this kind of simple replacement method holds. So looking at just the switching cell, previously said in this back to a buck converter. Okay, we can do the averaging just on the switching cell, plug that into the circuit and get the average nonlinear model. Turns out we can do the linearization now on these averaged equations as well, and then just plug in the linearized model to get a small signal linear circuit that we can use to derive transfer functions. Okay, so the way we do that from the PWM case, we did our averaging, found average V2 is D of T times average V1, and then the power balance equation for the currents. So if we wanted to develop a small signal model, we would linearize. Since these are nonlinear equations, we've got a time-varying voltage multiplying a time-varying control signal. We have to do a linearization. Multiplication of two time-varying things is a nonlinear operation. So we'll linearize and in the process be developing a small signal model. We linearize both of these equations, V2 hat, small signal perturbations in V2. So we linearize the right side of this equation. Do a Taylor series expansion to first order, or we'll take the partial of this expression with respect to each variable evaluated at DC, multiplying the small signal version of that variable. So we'll take the partial of this with respect to D. That'll be average V1, and we'll evaluate that at the DC solution. We'll get V1 times D hat plus D V1 hat. Second equation linearizes exactly the same, but with I's. Oops, back here. So I1 hat is equal to di2 hat plus i2 d hat. Okay, so if I wanted to, for example, sketch a circuit that models these behaviors, models these two equations, notice that these two terms have some constant D multiplying a voltage or current from the other equation or from the other side of the equation. So those two form a transformer. And these other two have some DC solution value, V1 or I2, multiplying our control parameter, D hat. D hat comes from external of the circuit, so those will just be controlled sources. So we sketch an equivalent circuit. V2, the voltage on the right side here, looks like some dv1 hat plus some voltage here, v1 d hat. And then I1 looks like some current here. It's going to look like DI2 hat, where this is I2 hat, plus this additional current I2D hat. Oops, I'll connect that. This is I1 hat, V1 hat, input port. Okay, and then the only thing to recognize is that, okay, the current here should be DI2 hat, which is D times the current over on the right. Voltage here is DV1 hat, which is D times the voltage over on the left. So combined, these two things are a transformer, have the equivalent behavior of a transformer, the turns ratio of 1 to D. And similar to the DC transformer, we put this AC symbol across it to note that this is a small signal mathematical construct. It's not a real transformer. It's just some model of the small signal AC behavior of the circuit. Okay. So there's the equivalent averaged and small signal linearized behavior of this PWM switching cell. I can plug that back into the parent converter, into this buck converter, and what I'll have is a linear small signal model of the buck converter. If I do that and then replace some of these V2, V1 with what those things actually are, so I2 is IL, V1 is VG, I get, and I'm back to the textbook small signal model of the buck converter. V1 replaced by VG, I2 replaced by IL or I in this, the way it's labeled here. Okay. So by the same token, same kind of approach, if we want to go to a for example, ZCS quasi-resonant, or let's just stick with the ZVS quasi-resonant, doesn't really matter. All we have to do is replace D of T with mu of T. Our switch conversion ratio. Okay. Now, because we're a small signal model evaluated at a DC operating point, that's going to show up in two different ways. So we're going to replace steady state with steady state mu. And then we'll have to replace small signal with small signal variations in mu. So these d hats become mu hat of t, and then d in the transformer here, which was just the value at steady state, becomes the value at steady state of mu. So this becomes d goes to mu, d hat goes to mu hat. And if we plug in all these things, now we've got the small signal model of this quasi-resonant buck converter. Same sorts of steps for any other of these PWM parent topologies. Take the small signal model of a flyback, replace D with mu for a given resonant switch, I get the small signal model of the resonant flyback. The one thing that's perhaps missing here is this mu hat, and we'll have to do a little bit of additional algebra to figure out, okay, how do we linearize this equation for mu? So I'm pulling the equation for mu back from lecture 28 that we derived for this ZVS quasi-resonant buck. It was this thing here, and I'll have that copied on the next slide. And we plotted it previously. It had these sorts of variations with JL and M. We plotted the behavior of this equation. Okay, so what we're going to do is develop mu hat, an expression for this, which is the small signal linearized behavior of this equation here. So what are we really doing in that process? Is we're saying, okay, take some DC operating point here, our steady state. So we are at some given output voltage, load, and switching frequency, and then we're looking at small variations in any of those parameters. It's a little bit strange to look at on this plot, since there's actually some behavior continuously at every point in here. I'm just plotting select curves of F. We're looking at, okay, as the load current varies, what is the behavior as input voltage or output voltage vary, and then kind of jumping between curves, what happens as F varies, and linearizing that behavior. It's obviously nonlinear here. If I start jumping between different curves or going up and down one of these lines, there's some higher order behavior. So we're going to linearize by just saying, okay, at this point, what is the slope of this equation with respect to variations in any of these variables inside it? Okay. So how do we do that? Take the equation again here. This is what we derived. say, okay, what are all the variables present? So we've got F and JL are the only two things in here that aren't constants. F is FS over F naught. JL is IL over I base, which is IL over VG times R naught. And we'll assume our hardware is fixed. So R naught and F naught are constant. R naught is the characteristic impedance, F naught the resonant frequency. Both of those things aren't changing in time once we actually build a converter. So the things that can vary are FS, change the switching frequency, the inductor current, IL, or the input voltage. So M is some function of FS, IL, and VG. And I'm going to go ahead and we derive this as M because it was for a buck converter, but we're looking at it now as just a general switch conversion ratio mu. So mu is a function of these three variables. So it means if we want to get the small signal linearized behavior of it, mu hat, it's going to look like some coefficient times linearized small signal perturbation coefficients on each of these terms. So we'll call those, let's see, some coefficient Ki times IL hat plus some coefficient KV times VG hat plus some coefficient, traditionally call this KC times FS hat, C being for control. In this case, VG is an input voltage, IL is a load current, FS is our control on this thing, what we'd be actually changing to control the converter. Okay. And then each of these coefficients is found by just doing a first order expansion. So Ki is going to be equal to the partial of this switch conversion ratio mu with respect to IL evaluated at DC. KV is the partial with respect to VG evaluated at DC. KC is the partial with respect to FS evaluated at DC. Okay, a little bit further, mu does vary a little bit between the different resonant switch topologies. So we can simplify and do it, all of our partials in terms of, back here, these two functions, P one half and P one. So this mu we derived for ZVS quasi resonant was one minus F times P one half of one over JL. Say this thing is one minus F times P one half one over JL. So that separates out my dependency on F and my dependency on JL. And so we could say each of these partials is just the partial of the overall expression multiplied the partial of this P one half function. So the partial of mu with respect to IL is going to look like the partial of this thing with respect to IL, which is, okay, this constant term out front will drop off. We'll have minus F times the partial of P one half with respect to JL, with respect to JL, what it is a function of, times, now we've done the partial with respect to JL, times the partial of JL with respect to IL. And we can just look at that here, partial of JL with respect to IL is gonna be R naught over VG. Seems like I'm just rewriting it in a different form, but the nice thing is if we do all three of these, we're going to find all of them just depend on this partial of P one half with respect to JL and make our work a little easier, not having to do three different times taking a partial. Okay. So if we do the partial of mu with respect to VG, again, looking at this expression up here, it's going to be minus F times partial of P 1/2 with respect to JL times the partial of JL with respect to VG. Here in this expression, the partial of JL with respect to VG is going to be minus IL R naught over VG squared. Because VG is in the denominator. And again, we're evaluating a DC, so use capital VG here. And then the last one, partial of mu with respect to FS. Okay, that if we take the partial with respect to FS, the only thing here that depends on FS is F. So we can take the partial of this expression with respect to FS. It's just 1 over F naught, negative sign, times P 1/2 of 1 over JL. It's a coefficient, but no need to take a partial because this P 1/2 doesn't depend on FS in any way. It's all encapsulated in this F parameter. So now we can solve all three of these coefficients for this KC, our control parameter. We just need to plug in. We already have everything, but for KI and KV, we have to take this partial of P 1/2 with respect to JL. And we'll just go through and turn the crank on that on the next slide. Once we have that, we'll have everything to plug in and get our small signal model of this switch cell. So the partial of P 1/2 with respect to JL, what's that going to be? P 1/2 is this everything here. It's this 1 over 2 pi times all this stuff. Okay. So in the partial, we'll end up with this 1 over 2 pi. This first term, 1 over 2 JL, become minus 1 over 2 JL squared. 1 over 2 pi minus 1 over 2 JL squared. Next term, pi is just going to go away as we take the partial with respect to JL since it's a constant. We have the partial of this arcsine of 1 over JL. Look up in a table if you don't know it offhand. I'm going to pull from my notes here, minus 1 over JL squared, 1 over square root. Minus 1 over JL squared. Clean that up a little bit. And then our next term, radical JL squared minus 1, be 1/2 over the square root of JL squared minus 1. So this is JL squared minus 1 to the 1/2. So pull the 1/2 out front, subtract 1, puts it in the denominator, and then times the derivative of the inside with this, which is 2JL. So we get 1/2 over square root of JL squared minus 1 times 2JL. And then our last term is JL, so we'll just get a plus 1 when we take the partial with respect to JL. Okay. So there's that derivative. Let's do some simplification here. I'll pull this 1 out to the front. Let's say minus 1 over 2 JL squared. And then what I'm going to do here is push one of these JLs from the denominator here. I've got JL squared in the denominator. I'm gonna push it down into this radical. So I'll just take one of them. When it goes onto the radical, it'll give me JL squared, multiply through, it'll be JL squared minus 1. So I'll end up with just one of them left. It's 1 over JL from this term in parentheses here. The other one went down here into the radical, gave me JL squared minus 1. The second term, 1/2 times 2, I'll just put the JL in the numerator. So now I've gotten these two things last two terms here over the same base. So I can combine them together. And then the last step I'm going to do is I'm going to pull out a 1 over JL from the numerator here. So I'll get same thing, minus 1 over 2 JL squared, plus I pull out a 1 over JL out front. Okay. Pull that out. What I'm going to get in the numerator is JL squared minus 1. Over in the denominator, I rewrite this radical as just JL squared minus 1 to the power of 1/2. So now I've got JL squared minus 1 to the power of 1 divided by JL squared minus 1 to the power of 1/2. The final result will be just the square root of that in the numerator. 2 pi 1 minus 1 over 2 JL squared. Times square root JL squared minus 1 over JL. And that's my final result. Okay. Now with this, I can plug this expression back in here, evaluate it, and now I've got all three of these coefficients, and I've got mu hat. Okay, so mu hat, I can plug in here along with mu, my original expression, and get a full small signal model of any of these quasi-resonant switched PWM converters in a two-switch parent topology. Okay. Key differences in the quasi-resonant case versus the traditional PWM case is that this mu hat expands out into these three terms, since it depends not only on our control but also on VG and IL, whereas in the PWM case, when we did this linearization, really only depends on D hat. These certain variations here show up as sources that could be easily kind of integrated into the circuit here. Now we've got variations in all three of these parameters that we're going to need to incorporate into the model in some way. Okay. So one way we could do that looks like this. So I took the original circuit, the small signal model of the buck converter, replace D with mu, in this case mu naught. It's just the steady state mu. Then mu hat replaces what was D hat in this VG source and this controlled current source. Then where does mu hat come from? Well, mu hat itself is KI times I hat, KV times VG hat, and KC times FS. This diagram here also has this GM of S. This is the modulator gain. In this case, if we are controlling this thing by varying switching frequency, this would be something like a voltage controlled oscillator. Where we have some voltage signal coming in. This is our reference design from some compensator sensing the output voltage or whatever it is we're trying to control, and then converts that into a variable switching frequency signal. So kind of the core here is taken directly from the small signal model of the buck converter, just replacing D by mu. And then this down here is functionally showing, okay, these mu hat variations aren't solely controlled by our controller. Can't just say go to a new D hat the same way we can We can say go to a new mu hat the same way we can just change d hat. What we actually change is fs hat, and then the switch conversion ratio depends on not only fs, but also any variations in the current and the voltage, which is why we have these three terms here. So you can see kind of how that plays out and deriving transfer functions around one of these resonant converters. So let's first kind of review how we would do it if we were in the traditional PWM case, back to d hat. If I wanted to know things like the transfer functions GVD, which is variations in the output voltage as I perturb the duty cycle, evaluated at DC. In this case, DC, we will evaluate it at, the all other independent inputs shut off. In this case, that's really just VG. Since we want the transfer function, we shut off all other sources and look at just the impact of variations in D hat on this output. So we'll shut off VG, shorts out VG, effectively shorting out this current source, so it doesn't matter anymore. And that short will reflect through the transformer and just give us a short right here. So we really only need to look at the right half of the circuit for all transfer functions other than the transfer function from the input voltage, which I'm not going to worry about at the moment. Okay. Then what does this transfer function look like? Well, we've just got an impedance divider with this VG D hat source. So when we pull out the D hat, we'll have VG times R in parallel 1 over SC over SL plus R in parallel 1 over SC. Some rearranging, this look like VG times 1 over S squared LC plus SL over R plus 1. And traditional just voltage controlled buck converter, that's probably the only one we really look at to design the controller. And we may look at the input voltage to output voltage transfer function to know line rejection. But I'm going to look at one more here, and it's going to be more relevant in the resonant case, but is a perfectly valid thing to look at in the PWM case, which is GID, variations in IL hat as we vary D hat, again with VG hat is equal to zero. So I'm just perturbing the same thing, but looking at a different output for this transfer function. I'm looking at IL hat, this current here, how it varies as I change the duty cycle. And I can derive that in the same way with VG hat shorted, all the same assumptions apply and circuit simplifications. It's just now solving for the current. Instead, it looks like VG times 1 over SL plus R in parallel with 1 over SC, the total impedance. Hide this voltage by the total impedance to the right of it. And with some simplification, we'll end up with a zero in the numerator over the same denominator. It's the same system. Always have the same denominator for any output. So if I wanted to draw a block diagram of how my control affects both of these signals, say D hat goes through GVD to give me V hat, goes through a transfer function GID to give me IL hat. And then I can design a controller around this. This is my averaged small signal linearized outputs. One approach may be to just put a voltage controller on, feedback from V hat through some compensator to D hat, ignore this current. If I wanted to do dual loop control, I could design kind of a fast current loop controller, senses variations in IL hat, feeds them back to D hat, and then a slower voltage loop controller that senses the output, feeds that back, and gives a reference for the average current mode controller. Both are options depending on the application, whether you want to have additional current sensing or not, dictate which one you might use. We go to the quasi-resonant case. Things are a little bit different now, since we have this additional, these additional parameters coming together to form mu hat. AR mu hat all this section down here is all just modeling this equation, mu hat is equal to ki times il hat plus kv times vg hat plus kc times fs hat. Then we can kind of do the exact same thing here for this circuit itself, but we'll have some additional segments of our block diagram due to mu depending on different things. Okay, so we can look at things like G V mu and G I mu, which would be V hat over mu hat, or IL hat over mu hat. These will be the same as the PWM case. So we'll still have a core here. Looks like really GVD mu, or it's the same thing as GVD to get V hat from mu hat, and GID to get IL hat from mu hat. Difference now is mu hat itself is the sum of these three things. It should be some variation due to IL hat. Feedback IL hat, go through KI. Some variation due to FS hat, my control. And some variation due to VG hat. So there's this already inherent feedback, in this case around the output current coming back and affecting the switch conversion ratio. So it's not solely controlled straight input to output. Right? Our transfer functions from the switch conversion ratio to these outputs are the same, but we can't just change mu. What we can change is the switching frequency, which is only one part of what makes up mu. Okay. We assume VG hat is equal to zero. We're not worried about variations in input. Same assumption I made back here. Then this will drop out, but I still, to get the transfer function from my control FS hat to my output voltage, have to consider this KI feedback from IL hat. The reason why we always need this equation now, even if we, in the buck converter, if we didn't want to do any current control, we wouldn't really need GID to design our controller here. Even if we don't want to do current control, we need to derive GID so we can see how this inherent feedback through KI affects the circuit. So for traditional just voltage loop control, what we would be designing our compensator, the plant we're actually looking at is GVC, V hat over FS hat. And we need to collapse down this feedback loop, say that that looks like KC over 1 minus KI GID times GVD. So we can no longer just look at this transfer function like we did in the buck converter. Got this additional term, which has to do with KC comes from different behavior between our duty cycle and our FS. This 1 minus KI GID comes from this inherent feedback. Okay. Okay. Does it look like we go through and do a simplification of plugging in these things here? I'll skip that because we're running short on time, and I just want to show an example of how these transfer functions vary. So I've got some ZVS quasi-resonant buck converter here, similar to the last one we looked at. Oops. Parameters, FS is 1 megahertz. Let's see what else. How about this? Still operating very close to JL is equal to 1 near the ZVS bound. And the operating point I'm at has P out is equal to 60 watts. V is equal to 12 volts. F is equal to 0.6. And input voltage is 48. And then these three parameters, KC, KI, and KV, if I plug in and calculate them, KC is 6.24 E to minus 12. KI is minus 0.005. KV is 5.6 E minus 4. Just plugging in equations back here with what we solve for partial of P1/2 with respect to JL at the DC operating point. Okay, so I plug those all in and plot for this converter both the transfer function of this converter in red, and blue here is the transfer function if it was just a hard switched PWM buck converter, no resonance, no soft switching, nothing else going on, with the same filter elements and switching frequency and operating point. Okay. What do we see? Okay, the dynamics are pretty darn similar. There's a big change in DC gain. That's rather innocuous in that in this one, this is GVD. This is GVC. GVD is V hat over D hat. GVC is V hat over FS hat. So we're looking at a different control input, and this big DC gain change just has to do with the units of what our control input is. We've got about 120 dB of difference in DC gain. So it's about a 10 to the 6th difference. FS DC value is 1 megahertz, 10 to the 6. D DC value is somewhere between 0 and 1. So there's about a 10 to 6 difference in what an equivalent variation in FS is to an equivalent variation in duty cycle, right? So I change the duty cycle by 1/2. It's a big change in terms of operating point. If I change FS from 1 megahertz to 1 megahertz plus 1/2 a hertz, that's no change at all. I need a much larger change. So that DC gain just has to do with this. It'll actually get knocked out of there when you do your modulator gain. This GM would have a really large gain. A volt variation causes a megahertz variation, so it would have a 10 to the 6 gain, which would normalize some of that in the overall loop. Okay. So that DC gain, not so important. And then we still have dominant characteristics due to the filter component's resonance, the filter inductor and the filter capacitor. Since we're averaging over a switching period, we don't see a lot of impact of those resonant elements. In certain cases, those can reflect down and significantly change even a low frequency behavior, but the resonance F naught between our LR and CR is happening up faster than switching frequency or close to it. So we don't see a lot of impact of those on this average transfer function. C is a little bit smaller Q, and this shift in DC gain, otherwise a pretty comparable plot between the two. Okay. So that's how we can go through this small signal modeling. There is a little bit more complexity to it, but it kind of follows the same format. This transfer function is really largely dominated still by GVD. It's got this extra gain term out front and some dynamics from GID. But depending on the value of this KI, not so much of an impact. And then KC is where we get that big difference in DC gain from this very small value of KC multiplying everything down. So that's one way to approach small signal modeling of converters that still look like PWM converters, still look like these two switch PWM converters, but just have quasi-resonant switching elements in there. This is quasi-resonant switching network. Hey, what do we do? So here is just taking these two and changing the DC gain of the ZVS quasi-resonant version to be the same, just assuming we multiply something in there to subtract that out, and so we can see a little bit better that they fall very closely on top of each other. So this approach works out nicely for things that we already know the transfer function of from the PWM case, and we can still apply averaging. All we have to do is replace the behavior of the hard switching network with one of this resonant switching network. What about things like the series resonant converter and parallel resonant converter, any of these AC link topologies? Those are a bit more complicated. For those, we can't really apply the same averaging steps anymore, because if we average the waveforms through the AC link, since they're purely AC, all those averages will go to zero and we'll have really no behavior. So we can't really, with the traditional averaging approach, model any of the dynamics through the middle of those. We can average at the input and output DC port, and we'll always end up with something that just looks like a current source charging a capacitor, or some very simple dynamics. If we want to get any more detailed on those, we have to develop some alternative techniques. There are a variety of possibilities. There is something called multi-frequency averaging, where we average not just the DC component, but we also average certain frequency components, like average an amplitude of a phasor, do that at multiple frequencies. There's also called discrete time modeling. That's the focus of a ECE 692 that I teach every other fall. That's a more general approach that can do small signal modeling of any switching topology, whether it's AC link, switch capacitor, PWM, anything. For the moment, we're going to leave it there and move on to some different topics and not go through the details of these different modeling techniques, small signal modeling techniques for various different topologies. So this will be the extent of what we talk in terms of controls and small signal modeling. So that's all for today. I will stick on here for a moment if anybody has questions, but I'm going to go ahead and stop.